Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Roz Rose the Pacific is brought to you by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Ross Savage, and welcome to episode 52 of Ross Rose the Pacific. The tide is high and rising.
This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much.
Welcome to another episode of Roz Rose the Pacific. My name is Nicole Bilodeau, and I'm going to be filling in for Leo today. He's on vacation in China. In case you don't know, I'm Roz's program director, and I'm stationed in beautiful Hawaii. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Nicole. Hi.
Hi. So how are you doing today?
Oh, well, not too bad, although I've kind of run slam into the ITCZ, I think. For the first time in ages, the wind is not helping me very much, so I've been rowing very hard this morning for not very much result. But, hey, that's life. Just as we were getting used to me zimming along at a very satisfactory 30-plus miles a day, the ocean was just lulling us into a false sense of security. And I think everything's going to get a lot more interesting from now on. I think for the next few weeks, I'm going to be repeatedly banging my head into this brick wall. And we'll just have to see what happens, really. I'm very much in uncharted territory here. So there might be a few interesting wobbles on the rod tracker coming up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, we knew this was kind of coming, didn't we?
We certainly did. And I've been having a really good correspondence, actually, with Jason Lewis, who 10 years ago was on a very similar, well, was on this patch of ocean. He had a pedal boat rather than a rowboat. And he also had a crewmate, which I don't. But he was also making his way from Hawaii towards Tarawa. And he's been giving me some really helpful advice. So it's really great that thanks to the power of email, I've been able to pick his brains about what's going on. But anyway, meantime, I'm just carrying on rowing, carrying on trying to push south and enjoying the blue skies. And as I look out of my cabin hatch right now, I can see, I think it's a mahi-mahi underneath the water, just a few feet away from my boat.
Nice.
And there are birds circling around, including these horrible smelly ruby birds. They haven't pestered me for the last 6 weeks or so. The first 100 miles, they were a real pain in the backside, but then they kind of cleared off. But yesterday and today, this one has started circling. And when I try and shoo him off my boat, he looks all indignant. But I don't want them pooping all over my solar panels again.
Yeah, that's pretty unpleasant.
It is. But I'm really fascinated to see how the next few weeks are going to unfold. There are all kinds of contradictory winds, currents. There might be a few thunderstorms thrown in for good measure. So it's definitely going to be interesting. But provided that it ends up with a landfall at some point, then I don't really know what happens in the interim. But my absolute worst nightmare would be I get pushed so far off course that that I don't manage to make landfall on either Tuvalu or Tarawa, and end up heading out into the big blue again. So fingers crossed that I manage to make landfall at some point.
Yes, please.
I've got places to go and people to see, things to do on dry
yes,
land.
Yes, things to do.
Exactly. There's all this stuff leading up Copenhagen Climate Change Conference in December, and as you know, my whole mission for this stage of my row is raising awareness of climate change, its consequences and its causes, and trying to get people at every level to take action on that. Everybody, grassroots level up to, I don't direct influence the global leaders, but if there's anything that I can do to just try and influence what's going on at this crucial moment, then that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Roz, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the Pull Together campaign and how you conceived of it and, you know, basically how they can get involved?
Sure. Well, I knew that I wanted to make this stage of the road about climate change. And often when people come to one of my presentations, they feel quite energized to go and do something equally energetic. I wanted to take that enthusiasm and turn it into kind of grassroots level action on climate change. So I'm inviting people to watch my 10,000 strokes a day with 10,000 steps a day. And they can go to the site at pulltogether09.org. That's pulltogether09.org, maybe I should say. And they can sign up there, and that would be really great. It's lovely if people do it anyway, but if they actually go and sign up, then we know that they're doing it, and they'll actually be even part of the Pull Together community, and they'll be able to see other people around the world also taking part in the challenge. So I would really encourage people if they want to do this, and 10,000 steps, just so they know, equates to about 4 miles a day, which actually is not that difficult to do if you've got a pedometer, and that allows you to include all the steps that you take every day, including steps just walking around your home or your office or wherever. And a few tips on how to build up your step count. Things like if you get up and walk around while you're making a phone call, or actually the best tip is if you're doing a short journey, if you would have taken the car otherwise, just walk instead down to the coffee shop or whatever. And that way, you're actually genuinely saving on some greenhouse gases because you're not using the car. And that way, it saves you some money as well. So I'd love it if people would get involved with that to show their solidarity with the cause. And there's also something that I personally am very excited about. Actually, you are too, Nicole, is we're going to be walking to Copenhagen. Or more likely, actually, walking to on and then taking the train with a load of other people heading towards the climate change conference, taking the train from Bonn to Copenhagen. And we're hoping that people come out and join us for a little bit of that walk. Obviously, if you're in North America, that's going to be a bit tricky, but hopefully people will go out and walk, even if it's near to their home, wherever that may be, and show their solidarity with us in spirit, even if they can't actually be physically walking alongside us. And it would just be great to think of this community of people all around the world all coming together to take action on climate change at every level, and also putting pressure on their legislators to just let them know that people care, that it actually matters, and this is actually, it's a vote winner for politicians to be taking action on climate change. It's just the number one issue facing us at the moment. I really feel like everything else, the economy, everything, is a subset of climate change, because if our global temperatures are going to go through the roof, then we're going to have much, much bigger worries in our minds than the state of the economy.
Yeah, it's absolutely all interconnected, and that's becoming more and more clear. And I think actually that's one of the interesting things about your destination for, you know, stage two, where you're going to be landing up, you know, within the next whenever month or so, whether it's Tuvalu or if it's Tarawa, you know, we're finding out that they've appealed to the government of New Zealand and some of these, you know, low-lying sort of Pacific island nations, because they're going to be underwater in a matter of decades. And so they'll be some of the first environmental refugees, and they'll be, you know, seeking assistance and new living situations from places like Australia, New Zealand, and elsewhere. And that's just staggering if you think about it. It's in our lifetime.
Yeah, this is such a good point. I'm really glad that you brought that up. Places like the Maldives in the Indian Ocean and Tuvalu, Tarawa in the Pacific, many, many of these island nations are so low, so close to sea level, that literally they are just disappearing. And these are going to be the first real victims of climate change. And it's a very real issue. Apparently, the South Pacific Film Festival that they have in, I think, American Samoa, a lot of the films that are submitted there, it's all about climate change because these people are seeing the ocean approaching their doorstep.
Yeah.
And unlike on the continental US or in Europe where, okay, if you live right on the coast, it's a bit of a bummer if you have to move house as your home falls into the sea. But you do at least have options. You can just retreat further up into the hills. But on these little islands, there is literally nowhere to go other than to move to a totally different country. And that those people, I think it's really tragic. You know, they've been there for generations and their culture. I think is in danger of being lost. So if we can mitigate those effects by taking decisive action on climate change, then that would be great. And somebody pointed out that even Tuvalu, I suppose, is like a poster child of the rising oceans issue. Even if I don't actually go there, if I decide to go to Tarawa instead, just the fact that I've been talking about Tuvalu and the reason that I'd originally chosen it because of this environmental angle, it's just made a few more people aware of what's going on. And I think, as with so many things, awareness is the first stage. Once you know something like that, it's very difficult to not know it.
Yep. Well, and the interesting thing, too, I think, is that these people are some of the lowest contributors to the problem, and yet they're the first ones to suffer the consequences. I looked up a study. It was done at Oxford University, and they said that environmental refugees is going to increase sixfold over the next 50 years to 150 million environmental refugees.
Wow.
And they said by 2010, which is, you know, just around the corner, there's going to be 50 million environmentally displaced people, most of whom will be women and children. And that's just, it's staggering. So I think it's really important, you know, what you're doing. To draw awareness, like you said.
Staggering.
Yeah.
Yeah, those figures are just amazing. And you're right that you look at a place like Bangladesh, which is largely low-lying, it is mostly going to be these low-income populations contributed so little to the problem that are going to reap the whirlwind, so to speak. And It's a harsh world. It seems very unfair. But good news. Let's look for the good news.
Yeah, this really is getting so Debbie Downer, isn't it? Tell us some good stuff, Roz.
I was really pleased to hear from, there have been some comments on my blog and also some of the updates that you've been sending me, Nicole. Mm-hmm. News from the G8 conference.
Yes.
It looks like things are moving in the right direction. It looks like at the international diplomatic level that countries are actually realising what needs to be done and are starting to buy into that. So I find that really, really encouraging. I remain worried about China, especially this week, has been on my mind because I've been listening to the Audible book of J. Martin Troost, Lost on Planet China, and just with 1.5 billion people there, their energy needs are just phenomenal, especially because they've got such a massive manufacturing sector. Mm-hmm. So that is a cause for concern. But I think with this kind of commitment at international level, hopefully China will come willingly to the table, and while to take action, they'll see where the future lies in these green technologies, sustainable technologies. But if they don't, hopefully with this level of international commitment, if need be, then sanctions and trade boycotts could be used against China if need be. I really, really hope it doesn't come to that. I hope it can all be done very amicably. But it was just interesting this week. I also listened to Long Walk to Freedom by Nelson Mandela about the changes that took place in South Africa. And obviously the ANC had a big influence on that, but it was all the trade sanctions against South Africa that played a large part in overturning apartheid. So there are ways and means of making these things happen. So I think there are lots of causes for optimism. And the more people become aware, the more people become active, both in terms of their own individual lives, but also just letting their leaders know how they feel about these issues, then I think I really feel like there's, like, things are changing fast now. I've been aware of the issues of climate change for a number of years, but my perception, even from out here, the back end is beyond 1,000 miles from the nearest land in the middle of the Pacific. My perception is hit the comments on my blog and news clips that you send me. There really seems to be this groundswell of awareness and interest and people actually going, oh my, we have a real problem here. And there's nothing to do about it. And I find what's your perception of my land? Do you feel like it's reaching the top of the agenda?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, there are days when I'm really encouraged and I think that it is. And then yet I'm still surprised at how many naysayers are still out there. And I'm trying to wrap my head around that part of it, because there are so many still of those. And there's a number of different arguments about, you know, well, the science is not clear and we still don't know what's causing climate change. And some people think it's just not happening. And to me, you know, even if you don't think it's happening, I think you made the point the other day in your blog, like, wouldn't, if you had it available to use clean sources of energy, why would you not do it? You know, reduce the risk of asthma to, you know, millions, simple things like that. So there are days when I feel very encouraged and it's good news. And like, you know, you're sort of inspiring everybody to continue to focus on the positive, and that's all we can do. There are always going to be people out there that say, you know, that are negative, and I think you just have to keep focusing on the positive.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to be lost by moving towards sustainable energy, because whichever way you look at it, fossil fuels are going to run out.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. They're a finite resource. They took bazillions of years to create, and we're sucking them out of the earth at a phenomenal and increasing rate at the moment.
Yeah.
And just mathematically, just plain common sense shows that is not sustainable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as you say, just putting aside for a moment the whole, oh, it's that bloody booby again. Sorry, pardon my language. It's had a land on my boat. Shoo. Oh, I'll deal with him later. Anyway, sorry about that.
The joys of live television and broadcasting.
Yes, that was just for authenticity. No, he is actually, he's becoming a bit of a pest. But yes, going back to sustainable energies, we're going to have to find these alternatives at some point in the future. So why not now? Because there are so many downsides to using fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And when there are alternatives, and it's only going to take... It's like we're 99% of the way there. We've got them. We just need a teeny weeny little bit more effort and will to actually make them viable on an industrial scale. And so what do we have to lose by doing that? So
yeah.
I really hope that even the people who don't believe in climate change, and I think it's a small and shrinking minority, but it's a very vocal minority. Even if they could just put that out of their minds, I think we would all agree that sustainable energy versus unsustainable energy, well, seems like a bit of a no-brainer to me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
I'm missing something.
No, I don't think you are. And I think that... Hey, Roz, there's been a couple of funny little questions in the chat room. And so somebody actually wanted to know what kind of booby you're seeing on there, and they wanted to hear a little bit more about critters on the boat and how your bottom's doing.
Okay, so what was the question about the booby?
They want to know what kind.
What kind of booby? A big fat smelly one. I think it's the same kind as before. It's got a kind of pale blue beak. And I'm saying this is a youngish looking one, because it's still got the kind of dappled grey and white plumage. But they do actually smell quite bad. They're not my favourite birds at all. like the other birds that I see around, I think some kind of tern. And I see them, if I just had any random moment on the boat, chances are I would be able to see at least one of them around.
Yeah.
And often a couple of times a day, there'll be quite a group of them, and they'll be just hovering over the waves and swooping down and trying to catch fish. I'm seeing just a lot of fish. I really enjoy them on this stage of the row. So that's cool. I don't enjoy it, the attack from the squid. I'm still recovering from that horrible experience when the squid just pushed themselves onto my neck. And then whatever that thing was that glommed onto my backside, and I was overside scrubbing barnacles. I haven't actually been inside since.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I really just absolutely gave me genies. So, barnacles are growing away unmolested on the hull of my boat at the moment. Maybe later on, when the memory of the glomer has faded, I might pluck up the courage to go back over the side. But yeah. At the moment, I'm still recovering. That's my bottom. It's not bad at all, thank you. It's not an issue at the moment.
I'm sure pretty reassured.
It's going to be the most famous bottom on the internet, isn't it?
It might be. Hey, Roz, we've got to wrap up because they've got the next show coming up. So I guess we'll talk to you again, same time, same place next week.
I shall look forward to it.